Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Boom, 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 boom. I forgot, Andy. Forgot we were doing an ad for our show that we've released.
The advertisers are not going to be happy with this, Alistair, and I know because I am one of them, and I am Andy, most ticked off.
Read the copy, Andy. Just stick to the copy.
This episode is brought to you by Magma. Magma, yes, Magma, that glorious liquid. And also the show that Alistair and I performed at the 2019 Comedy Festival, back when such things were possible. And now it has been recorded in indelible digital and presented online, on the internet, for your eyes and ears upon to feast.
For your very consumption.
Yes, this is our speculative engineering fiction show. Not many people are doing engineering fiction. And we spotted
nobody
a gap.
Are doing, yeah.
And we That's inserted right. ourselves into that gap in the market.
Everybody's doing science fiction, but nobody's applying that science.
Applied doing... science fiction.
Yeah. So that's what engineering fiction is.
Apply sci-fi.
Exactly. And so it is now available for $10 Australian, which is almost nothing in everything... other dollars.
You're right. The exchange rate it works in your favor, but we still get one unit of joy every time this is purchased, regardless of which fiscally glorious continent or country you purchase said video experience from. You're looking at an hour of premium quality comedy recorded live at Stupid Old Studios, and what by live I mean, you know, recorded in the sense that everything is recorded live.
Yeah. And you can get it from sospresents.com.
/ something.
Magma.
/magma.
But if you go to just...
The link will be below in the show notes.
But if you go to sospresents.com, you will be able to find it there.
Correct. Go to your computer or mobile phone. And from there, so we're giving directions here, okay?
Andy
get up
is
from
making
wherever
this
you're sitting.
Purposefully long-winded. We put this at the beginning of the show so that everybody would hear it, but we're going to make it so long-winded that no one will be able to get through the ad.
We're going to make it so long that it bleeds into the last 5 minutes of the show where everybody's already tuned out. It's going to be a feature-length advertisement. Are there any of those? We'll find out when we discuss that as a potential sketch idea in the pod proper, which starts now. Ring, ding, 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 ding. Hello, and welcome back to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with 5 sketch ideas. I'm Andy.
And I am Alistair George William Indigestion Trombley Birchall.
Oh, yeah. Is that is that your third middle name? Indigestion is my third middle name.
Yeah, it's the most middle one.
Are you actually not in a fantastic way, gastrointestinally speaking?
I mean, look, since isolation has happened, Andy, I've... You know, as you know, I haven't been drinking during this time, but I have been substituting that with oil and oil in all sorts of various foods, and so I get a high rate of indigestion.
Well, there are two ways in which drinking can be turned in. There are two ways in which drinking can affect your body, positively and negatively. Mm. Negatively, for the vast majority of people, where drinking is a thing that they do in addition to their existing lifestyle.
But that's right.
It can affect your body positively if you are drinking as an alternative to the utterly vile things you were otherwise subjecting said body to. And this is part of my one-step program, wherein... Yes. You have such an appalling diet.
Oh, the pace suggests you have an idea.
You have such an appalling diet that when you instead take up drinking, your body is so relieved, it unlocks an additional 2 years of life to be enjoyed at the end of your existing life. Yes.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I mean, I guess the world is a little bit like a video game like that, in that if we can unlock the thing that has trapped aging in as a function of our bodies, then we can probably live longer. And there's a key. There's a key out there. It's not like a golden key that's sitting under a pillow.
No, made although of it silk. Might be.
It might be, but what more likely to be is that it's a chemical that we can put in our bodies that can go in and it can rewrite some aspect of our genes or switch a gene off, right? And it's a key you got to make in a lab with some liquid, and you got to put it in a beaker, and you got to swirl it around and look through it, make sure that there's no lumps. No splashback, you know?
Is that what they're looking for when they swirl it around, they look in there?
They go.
There's no boogers or anything.
Is there any flakes left over from that spanakopita I was eating at lunchtime that might have been washed, a bit of backwash in there from when was running between my teeth?
Is it true that scientists take a sip of everything in the lab? I never have anything in the lab that I haven't sipped. It's just one of the lab rules.
Mm-hmm. The scientific process is a digestive process.
Yes.
You actually have to break it down with the body.
Have we already...
They weren't sure that all brain processing occurs in the brain, all mental processing. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Have we already discussed on the podcast the idea that, you know, obviously, as depicted in the movie The Fly, flies vomit up some digestive fluid onto something that they're going to eat, some, you know, stomach acid or whatever, and then they eat the sort of the pre-digested already vomit, basically. Have we discussed the possibility of introducing that as an additional culinary option for human beings? Because at the moment we have the blender.
The fly vomit?
Well, we have the blender, you know, which does the mastication, the chewing part. So in a way, the digestive system process is already externalized to a certain extent. Even cooking is an externalization of the digestive process because it begins to break down some of those complex proteins. But... Mm-hmm. What about just a little spritz bottle that you can take with you that contains a certain amount of stomach acid that you can
Or fly vomit.
Yes, indeed. Straight up fly vomit in a little spritz bottle that you're sitting at the cafe with your friends, you can just give a little squirt onto the meal beforehand, and this just gets the jump on some of the otherwise tedious process of enjoying food.
Because
enjoying
look,
one of the all... most truly objectively enjoyable things that there is.
One of the few only objectively enjoyable things. Right? And Annie, this is, you know, why I love this is because you could sell this in health food shops, right? Because it's from nature. It's all natural, right? Mm. All you've done is bottled it.
Mm. Well,
you know, and you could say you've got it at perfect, fly temperature, and you snap froze it at that temperature.
Yep.
while it was,
am I right in saying that you froze in the temperature?
Froze in the temperature, yes.
Snap frozen to preserve its original temperature?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I love that as a feature of this product.
Yeah, which is turd hot.
Oh!
That.
Yeah.
Just defrost it.
Mm.
Just defrost it and it'll be turd hot.
Yeah.
Like that.
Allow it to thaw.
And I mean, technically, as soon as you consume it and it gets into your gut, it will be turd hot.
Yeah. That's true. That is another way to look at the digestive process as the human body is a system for getting food to turd temperature.
Mm-hmm. Then you can say the body uses a lot of energy digesting food, right? Don't you want to have more energy?
Mm.
Well, then start digesting it before you've eaten it.
Yep. Now,
with fly vomit.
It would be tragic seeing the rows upon rows of cages where tiny shackled flies have their stomachs pumped over and over again, milked essentially to extract their their stomach acids. But
this is how we would get it from them. Sorry, were you heading to something?
No, I wasn't.
This is how, you know, okay, now I don't know if you've ever been into an Asian restaurant, but occasionally they have those little plates of food that are not real.
Yes.
Right? And I've seen those little plates of food that are not real be made very small. This is how you collect fly vomit.
Yeah.
You put those in the cage with them.
Mm.
Right? The fly seems interested.
Finally, a meal that has been sized proportional to me.
For me, like that. They go over it. They walk on it a little bit, right? And then they vomit on it.
Mm.
That's when our fingers come back in the cage and pull the meal away.
Before the vomit even hits it, right? Revealing sort of hole that the vomit goes down and is sucked away.
It was an illusion the whole time. They've got a plate of stuff that's just it's like a colander, an upside down colander.
People would say you could mechanize this process, have some kind of tiny sushi train going past the fly's cage that it's constantly spitting at, constantly missing. But we find that you don't get the same quality of vomit as you do from an entirely hand-milked fly population.
Hand-stolen.
It's beautiful,
stolen
Alistair.
Directly with the hand, yeah?
It is beautiful. I like that we will, over time, begin to breed Jersey cows, which are a huge, swollen cow with a beautiful, belly that that contains a lot of extra vomit.
We could do is, you know how when a farm animal is fly blown, that's usually a bad thing.
Mm, yes.
But on this farm... We will breed a sheep that doesn't have a head and doesn't have legs.
And it's all ass. It's all fly blown ass.
Fly blown ass.
Oh, it's all dag. Right?
It's just a butthole and a mound of ass. And you can put food into the butt. And it goes straight into the digestive area and then comes back up and gets vomited up as poop. And then the flies just get involved.
I mean, what I like, you know, it's great because it's all worth it. It's all worth it for this great product that we're working towards. Alistair, is this a sketch idea?
Well, I think the bottled fly vomit is.
Yes, it is.
I don't know if I mean, I love the idea of a sheep that is nothing but fly blown.
Mm. Do you?
Would you call it a bit of fly blow?
What I would call the creature, or?
Well, I mean, like that area. It is an area that is fly blown.
Mm.
But what is the actual area called? Is it the fly blow?
Fly blow area.
The fly blowings?
Don't know, Al. Don't know. It's the old fly landing strip. It's the old dagricultural area. It's the old, you know, whatever.
Andy, if there were sort of flies around that, let's say a guy, an old man, decides that he's creating a Jurassic Park, but it's not Jurassic Park, it's just big flies.
Yeah, how big are we talking? Right?
I mean, these are, and oh, you're about to find out. These are flies that are made so that you can, a single person, and maybe sometimes a person on a date with another person,
a couple,
can get on the back of the fly and fly it around.
What a beautiful first date.
It's a once in a lifetime experience if you don't work there.
I mean, I imagine though that the flies themselves will still be as capricious, as attracted to disgusting things, as likely to just smash against windows as they are in their small fly state. You know, like their intelligence has increased.
Yeah, but have you ever been to a beach? You know how a lot of beaches they don't allow glass?
Mm.
It's a very similar thing here, but for a very different reason. Here they don't like glass. Why would you build glass on an island where you've got flies, giant flies, that are a mode of transportation?
You're right.
You're
right. Yeah. Only I could imagine for the potential comic effects if somebody were to make a sketch about it. But you're right to rule that out, Alistair. I think...
No.
First date fly ride is beautiful. And all those romantic songs, you know, Fly Me to the Moon, etc., they take on a fantastic new rich deep meaning.
I guess
come fly with me
to the moon.
Etc.
I mean, well, I was thinking, I mean, when you think about it, if it was fly me to the moon, it could be, I mean, the other meaning could be a guy who's getting turned into a fly on the way to the moon.
It really could.
Like, as if somehow the process of him being turned into a fly is what is powering the vessel that they're on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
I'm sorry.
So
I'm
like
just
maybe
going to have to take a break from the podcast for a week and a half while I let that filter through my mind.
So the way that they do it, right? The way that they do it, it's your basic E equals MC² kind of scenario.
Okay.
Right.
Basic.
So you're turning his mass into energy.
Yes.
Right? But you're, to kill him would be murder. But what you're doing is you're taking his giant shoulder, right? And you are turning most of it into energy to power the vessel, but keeping some that is the shape of a fly, much smaller, but you're replacing it with a fly shoulder.
Yes.
And you're doing that with all his bits.
Yes.
Taking his big head, replacing it with a tiny fly head.
Yes.
Like that?
Your
grandfather's axing him, turning him into a creature that is alive and that is going to continue to live.
And that was all that was in the contract?
Yeah.
You know? All John F. Kennedy said was that I will send men to the moon and get them back alive. He didn't say back alive as men. He said they will be men when they leave, and when they return, they will be alive. Before the decade is out, I will send a man away and return to you a living creature, safely to the earth. They cannot get me for that. They cannot get me for that. I am Michael Caine. John F. Michael Caine.
John F. Michael. Why do you keep saying that? I will return him back a living creature.
I love that he's made the speech. They're having trouble developing the technology to get the men back to the moon and safely back as men. They go back to the speech and look for loopholes.
This fuel is too heavy. We can either have men or fuel. And we already said we're going to get men there.
What if the men were the fuel?
What if the men were the fuel?
Yes. No wonder he took such a small step for man. I mean, I would have thought it would just be a regular step for man. Unless...
Yeah. Why would it have been such a small step for man?
Unless he had tiny legs. The tiny legs of a fly.
Or was it because his suit was rather restrictive?
Oh, that would be embarrassing. Well, that's definitely something, Alistair. Absolutely.
Okay,
I cannot believe that turns out to be something. I mean, leaving aside the technicalities of whatever fusion reactor that they have on this ship that is capable of just turning human flesh into pure energy. Pure kinetic energy, no less. I'm very excited.
Yeah, that is a real good win for us.
But they managed to work that out. They could get that.
I mean, they just need to turn it into heat, really, and then the heat will do the rest of the.
Will it though? How does that work, Alistair?
Eh?
Once you got into, I don't understand how you can have a nuclear powered spaceship. To be honest, I don't know how you turn that into thrust.
Yeah. There must be, particles that have weight that you can shed that could work, maybe. I don't know. Gravity? Could you make it turn into gravity particles?
That might create more trouble than it's worth. But all right. I'm going to allow it. We can look
what
into this.
A reverse laser?
Research.
You know how, like, you can shoot a laser and it'll make heat? Could you have heat and make a laser? And I don't know if that would propel. Yeah, it probably doesn't propel.
I mean, there is momentum components too. Does light have momentum, Alistair? Photons? I believe they do.
They do have momentum.
They do have momentum.
They have
so
to
if
have
you were
momentum.
Shooting light out the back, you could, in theory, get momentum in the opposite direction by conservation of momentum. I mean, we're not far off, Alistair. We're getting close to cracking this thing.
We're getting close.
Wide
We've
open.
Said a few things. Yeah. But it doesn't have any weight, Andy, and it can only go the speed of light. So I don't know how that would work for our ship. Do you think our ship could only go the speed of light
at this point? No. That's not how conservation of momentum works. So don't worry about it, Alistair.
Oh,
we'll be okay. Alistair, I've written down on my piece of paper the word super adequate. Adequacy. And this is a new
not good.
Concept.
It's you not know. Good.
Not good.
But it is.
It's the Uber. Yeah. It's the Uber adequate. And
well, it's the most adequate something can be before it gets good.
Well, I was thinking, and I think the answer to that might be spaghetti bolognese.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a ceiling to how good that can get, but I also think that it is perfect just the way it is. Like, it does exactly everything that it is supposed to do.
Mm.
But the limitation to its form is such that it can't ever achieve true greatness. But
it's a tough one, Andy, because I would say that spaghetti bolognese is one of the highest forms of anything.
Well,
whereas you're basing this off of some vague memory of spaghetti bolognese that you have.
You're right. I might be specifically thinking of the walnut and cauliflower substitute spaghetti bolognese.
Oh, Andy, that is absolutely the thing that could only get at the very highest super adequate.
You know what? That actually, but this is what it is, isn't it? This is what vegan substitutes are attempting to achieve, super adequacy. Because I don't think anyone is trying to saying, I'm going to make a vegan cheese that is better than actual cheese. Right?
No. Although they should be aiming for that.
But I think if you did that, it would no longer be cheese. Right?
Yeah.
It would be something else. If you're imitating, you can't surpass the thing you're imitating, or your imitation has failed.
Yeah, or as soon as it does, it becomes something new.
Mm.
Because once an imitation is something better, then suddenly you're the thing that things would want to imitate.
Yeah, yeah. You become a thing worthy of imitation. I mean, nobody impersonates impersonators. There are no Elvis impersonators. I assume, although maybe there are people who do impersonations of Andy Kaufman's Elvis impersonation.
Yeah, I mean, look, there might be people who are like, this is what Elvis impersonators are like.
Yeah. What is that? What are we describing there? I mean, could you have a, you know, like sort of at the moment, you know, Parks, the town of Parks in Australia every year hosts an Elvis festival, right?
Yeah.
And they have a lot of Elvis impersonators there from all over the world, I assume, converge on that location and impersonate Elvis. But I wonder if you would ever have a fringe, you know, Parks Elvis Fringe Festival, which is for people whose interpretation of Elvis doesn't fit within the constrictive limitations of what the Parks Elvis Festival would ever program. I assume they program it pretty heavily.
I mean, you got to cut out a lot of crap. You know, and you got to make sure that you, what's the word that you, it's like a, something that an artist, like that a gallery owner would do, curate. You got to curate these things.
Yes.
Or else you'll get too much of the same stuff at this festival.
You know what I would like to see, and I think there might be a sketch in this, is speculative Elvis impersonation. Because Elvis did die relatively young, right? So I would like to see people who are impersonating or trying to project forward what Elvis could have gone on to do, what other phases after his sort of, you know, his first and then his comeback and then his Vegas years, what that would look like. You know.
Yeah, I'd like that.
What?
Like.
Would.
When Elvis, at 90, what his TV special would have looked like.
Yeah, what would Rick Rubin have done with Elvis, if he'd done to Elvis what he did to Johnny Cash with the American recordings. And I think that gives, you know, I think I'd like to see a portrait of an Elvis impersonator who's becoming frustrated with the... Oh, okay, this is what it is. It's a movie that's strictly ballroom, right? But it's called Strictly Elvis. And it's somebody, their whole... They, you know, there's a lot of pressure in their family to be an Elvis impersonator, but then they get sick of just doing the same things that Elvis used to do, and then they start to do new Elvis, new Elvis, new Elvis. And they do things that Elvis might have done. And,
sure.
And it turns out to be great.
This is Elvis during a steampunk period. I'm riding an elephant.
It's perfect, Al. It's perfect. You know, this is one of those sketches that I'm really glad we don't have to actually write. But I feel...
I mean, I actually to be honest, like, Andy, I wrote down speculative Elvis impersonator within seconds of you saying it.
Great. Thank you.
Because there's a vast number of places that we could go.
Mm. And we should document this early
starting point. I dare you to try and write a speculative Elvis impersonator sketch for the show that we're currently writing on. See if you can fit it into a political satire show.
You know what? I reckon that's the sort of thing that could have a place.
Yeah.
You know, there. I don't want to get into it now. I'm writing it down.
Yeah, we can talk that. Yeah, we can talk about that later.
I'm inscribing it on this piece of toilet paper that I'm keeping my notes on. I don't know where you keep notes, but
think about how like Tarantino would have like used them in a film or something like that.
It'd be so good. We'd be so blessed to have that probable sex offender with us still today.
Elvis?
Yeah.
I think I heard some weird stuff about him where he was like, I think he was like another one that was, had some real issues from his mother dying and like, you know, when he was young, I think, and he wanted to spend a lot of time indoors and just kind of cooped up and with his wife, but it wasn't very sexual. It was kind of a weird, like, let's just be in a cocoon together. Like he was recreating the womb a lot.
Mm. With his wife, though.
And I think he might have had a lost... Maybe that's what it was. It was a lost twin brother.
He did have a lost twin. Yeah. Twin that was stillborn.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. And so he was... And he was... He really mourned the loss of this kid, this brother, somehow.
That's amazing.
Must have told him during a time that was just, like, very psychologically fragile.
Well, I mean, I think... Oh, I can't get into it, Al. It's going to make me really sad. great. I feel like we had some other ideas in there, Alistair. If we were to wind it back just before we were talking about Elvis and the impersonation thereof.
Oh, we were talking about super adequate.
Oh, right, yeah. Making a vegan cheese that's better than regular.
No, but
cheese.
I think that there's an idea. I mean, there's almost a. It's more like a. You know, a discourse was what you've come up with here. Mm. You know, it's not necessarily a sketch idea.
But it's a philosophical. It's a sort of,
yeah, I think, you know, it's a meditation.
Mm. Yes. Well, Alistair, you're welcome to use that in a Shusha guided meditation.
No, I don't mean it like that. I mean in the way that like Jean-Jacques Rousseau would do a meditation. Meditations on the super adequate, but it's more like meditations on vegan recreations of dishes.
Yeah. Well, I think just, you know, meditations on the super adequate already feels to me so deeply like the title.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Of a philosophical novel, I reckon I could already get it published. I think if I just printed up a bunch of books with that on the cover and then blank pages in between, it's the sort of thing that people would want to buy because it would look very smart on the shelf, but no one would ever open. I might put a couple of... Or I could just put some garbage-generated text inside. And...
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's got to be literally tens of dollars to be made.
Well, Andy, you know, when you and I had a big, large public debate online about wetness...
Yes.
That did make me think that we could release a small book. Like, I'm talking a thin kind of, you know, novella-sized book, but it's like the wetness debates. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, kind of like you know, that
like
Plato
Chomsky
would release.
And what's his name?
Yeah, you know? Like Chomsky and Foucault having a conversation about, you know, I don't know, epistemology or something.
Alistair,
like that.
I think let's turn this into a live show, right? We'll dress up in old fusty old suits. We'll sit in some sort of 70s-style armchairs.
Yeah.
We'll have a moderator, okay? Someone who can sit between us and mod, you know, because they're a moderator. Moderator.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, really, mod has within it the word nod, because an M is really a double N.
Well, it's an N and a half. I think it's... How much is it? It's really only an N... It's an N and a third. I think you'll find.
Look, I think you'll find it's 2 3-quarter Ns.
Oh, I suppose... Oh, well, I mean, are you looking... Are you thinking of a lowercase N? I was thinking of an uppercase. Both of them.
Andy, this is another debate.
We've got another hour.
There's another hour on this.
There's another series. How can we... Yeah, well, meditations on wetness absolutely is something. Alistair, I don't know if the listeners can tell, I got a microphone stand. So I'm, you know, my microphone is now like in, you know, behind a pop filter. In a little shockproof thing, propped up on a little tripod.
Jesus. And they are going to be able to tell.
I'm trying to alpha you on audio quality.
Well, it's working. Here I am with my really dry mouth, and I've got like these really kind of high pitch kind of sounds going on right now. They're going to know that's not you because you're too far from the mic to pick up those at the, you know, the quality of the level that they're picking up mine.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm hoping to sort of, you know, like a slightly more evolved turkey or something, slowly move away from you into a sort of a realm of audio quality that can only be experienced by, you know, some of the listeners, and then I'll become an entirely
Species. This is a turkey that's evolving into a high quality audio.
I don't know why I included the turkey element into that.
I mean, that part where, you know, you'd think this would be a bad evolutionary move, but where it like it loses its physical form and then can no longer procreate. But that first one getting created would be incredible because a turkey would open its cloaca and out would come an amazing sound.
Just a gobble. This turkey
but
is
a
all
high
gobble.
Quality. It's a high quality. People would say this is a turkey with two mouths, one with its mouth and one in its cloaca. But what they didn't know was that it was a new species of turkey escaping, being born. And at the same time, then traveling through the universe forever.
I don't know if that's anything, but Alistair, it made me think of this, and I don't know why it made me think of this.
I'm going to write it down. I think there's something in there.
Great. Okay. All turkey, it's all gobble. All butt gobble. I want you to answer this question for me, Alistair. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to give me what is the best non-filthy explanation or definition or if I opened a company or a business or a kiosk called the Butt Hut, what could I be doing assuming that none of it is, you know, unpleasant in any way, you know, inappropriate.
Sure. You could be, you could convert sort of the stubs of cigarettes into something edible.
Yeah. Okay. I could. I could recondition them.
Yeah, you know, you could into, recondition them
into new cigarettes. It could be
yeah.
It could be butts. I could be at the beach, right? And I could be selling little or hiring out little houses, okay? But yeah. They just fit over your butt so that when you're lying down sunbathing, mm-hmm. you just have a little, your butt is indoors.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And, you
and
know,
like
you
people
could...
can sort of deliver mail to your butt and stuff like that.
You could keep your valuables in there, you know, your wallet and stuff, which would be in your pants. If there's a risk of
well, you could keep them
stolen.
in a safe in your butt hut.
In your butt hut.
sure. I mean, you could sell sort of like, you know, those Perspex toilet seats that they make that have like, you know, barbed wire in them or like goldfish or like pictures of a horse or something like that. You could make those, but not for toilet seats, for the butts of guns. So that you could add that flourish to your new handgun or rifle.
Oh, yeah, guns have butts.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
You know, and that way you could be an individual whilst you're pointing your rifle at somebody.
That's right.
Express your individuality.
As well as your rage. I'm not all rage, you know. I have other interests.
Well, I mean, that's a great way. You could show people that you're into stamp collecting.
You could... I was thinking a butt hut could also be a doctor's surgery, but one that only does second opinions.
So, a dector?
A doctor's surgery. Oh. You know. Yeah. And, you know, somebody says, somebody gets diagnosed with, you know, an inflamed lymph node, mm-hmm. and they want a second opinion. You go to the butt hut. And they you go there, and the doctor says, "Well, it could be," and then they give you a second opinion. They
so they
don't
only
do any
second
first
opinions.
They only do.
But is it is the doctor's surgery tiki themed?
It's all
which explains why they're in a
it's a hut.
Yeah.
Yes, it's got a Pacific Island. Vibe, there's no shoes, you know. I think that does, there's sand everywhere, and I think that does for me fit philosophically with the concept of a place that only does second opinions, man.
Yeah no, I hear that. You wouldn't go there for your first opinion.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any point in going and getting a second opinion if you know that the opinion's going to be very similar to the first opinion. They guarantee that you'll hear an opinion that is different.
You know, see, that's good. Yeah. And what they do that, what, by coming up with just the craziest opinion?
Correct.
Yeah.
A tiki-themed opinion. Look.
So wait, butt hut, second opinion doctor.
Thanks for writing that down, Al.
I mean, I like that second opinion doctors, and it's a bunch of doctors who only give second opinions who got together to create their own joint surgery so that they could save on rent.
Yes. United.
You know? And then they, yeah. But then also, you know, this is the problem with most doctors is that they don't get, you know, like KFC or something like that. They'll create that burger where the chicken is the bun. And then, you know, and that's a product that makes you go, I got to go there, even though I would normally not go there, and try that product, because that just seems crazy enough to be an experience that would be rewarding for
work.
My life.
Yeah. You ever have one of those?
But doctor, well, I can't remember if I tried that one, actually. I think maybe I was... I was trying to eat healthy when that came out. But doctors, they don't get to sell products like that, really. I don't think.
Not reputable ones.
No, but if you were to become a tiki-themed second opinion doctor, I think people would get a second opinion just for the hell of it.
Yeah, you're
just 'cause
right.
I want to see... I want to see what this is like. Why has he got spears in his office?
I think you, even if you're really happy with your first opinion, you get these, you get people coming in, taking the piss, trying to get a second opinion when they haven't actually even got a first opinion. And I reckon you could sniff them out a mile off and you'd kick them out into the street like the dogs that they are.
Absolutely.
For taking the piss.
But you'd still charge them. Because there's a 24-hour cancellation fee.
Correct.
And
they charge you 24 hours.
Yeah.
Alistair, do we have some words from a listener?
Wait, before we go, there was something else. Oh, I just lost it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. It's all good. Yeah, we do, Andy. And I don't think we've done these ones, but maybe I've read it so many times that I feel like we've done it. Andy, we have three words from a Patreon listener, Patreon subscriber, who subscribes to our Patreon and pays at least $3. It's Jimbri.
Jimbri.
Jimbri's our listener. There's no last name. It's like, they're like Cher.
In what
Jimbri.
Way?
Jimbri. Well, they don't have a last name.
Oh, I was hoping it would be a funny other way that they were like Cher.
There, he's sitting on a cannon.
Correct.
He was once married to Sonny.
There you go. See? This is hilarious.
Sonny Bono. Sonny Bono. Do you think Sonny Bono was related to Edward de Bono? There can't be that many Bonos.
Edward de?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I guess de wasn't his middle name.
All right, Al. What have they got for us? Jimbri. Thank you, Jimbri.
Three words. Do you want to try to guess one?
Yeah, yeah. Kleptomania.
No.
Oh.
It's outside.
Oh, okay.
Then upside.
Outside. Upside.
And then down.
Outside, upside, down. Outside, upside, down.
The idea of outside, down.
Yes.
Is very interesting.
Yes, indeed. Isn't it? I mean, this is the problem with outside down. It implies that, the outside really isn't a side, is it? That's the problem with the word outside. The outside consists of either many sides or no sides at all.
But let's say if you picture a scrotum.
Yes.
Right. So it's got an outside.
You're right.
And then
it does.
It's got an inside. Right. It's got an inside. Mm. Now, in order for it to be outside down,
yes,
you would have to cut around the bag, and then lay it out flat,
yes,
like a pancake.
You're right.
And then have the inside up.
You're right. And you know, I would be lying if I said I wasn't curious about what the inside of my scrotum looks like.
Yeah.
It.
You know what I think? Do you think? I reckon it's kind of glisteny.
Yeah. Is there any liquid in there? Are the balls floating in any liquid?
I don't think so. But I imagine there's a wet air.
Wet air. There can't be air in there. There's no air in there, Alistair.
No, not enough that it's inflated, but there's a bit, you know, it's like a wet vacuum.
Have we talked about this? The idea that there could, that like, if there was a little bit of air in there, that it could be an emergency air supply? You know, I mean, it's another one of those ones where it's like, it's kind of crazy,
like,
not to put at least one breath in there.
Yeah,
but then
because I could, you know, you could picture
you
as you're trying to escape. Well, you can picture this as you're trying to escape from like an upturned, upside down sinking ship.
Yes,
and you're trying to break through the hull from underneath, you know, from the inside, and you just need, you know, you can, you've managed to sort of pop one nail out of the side of the boat and water's pouring in like that, and it's filling up to the top, and you're banging to the roof, just trying to get enough space so that you can squeeze out, and then you do, and you're struggling for air, but now you're out and you realize you're like, you know, 200 meters under underwater, and you just need to get to the surface. And then you really, you go and you look down and you can see your ball bag is kind of buoyant and you're actually, if you stop swimming, you're, you start moving up towards the air.
Dragged
ball bag
up
first.
Yeah.
Okay. But you don't have time to just go with the flow. You, what you do instead is you get your crowbar that you're using to break out of the thing, and you pierce your bag, right? In a single bubble.
You say, sorry, little buddy. Like your...
sorry, little... mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, you're saying goodbye to an old friend. Mm. And then a single bubble comes up, and then you chase that bubble. You chase that bubble upwards, and you... get, you try to get your mouth around it, right, so that you can just have one breath of air to just get you to the top. It's just that backup air. There's, and that air's got a funk to it, a funk that you've never smelt before, but now you've tasted.
Yep. And up you go to freedom. But at what cost?
I guess, I suppose maybe on the way up, probably one of your testicles escapes from the bag as well.
I mean, the other way to look at it is sort of like a situation like in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Or is it Star Wars? When on the ice planet Hoth, when, Luke has to cut into the belly of his that hairy, big hairy creature he was riding around on and climb in there for warmth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way, the ball bag is a big hairy creature that we're all riding around on. And, you know, I can imagine being lost in a frozen situation. If your ball bag was big enough, you could cut into it and climb in there.
Or pull it over you.
Pull it over
like
you.
Like a blanket.
Yes.
Like a blanket.
I mean,
you know, to shade you from the, to hide you from the wind.
All that stretch has got to be useful for something.
Yeah. Also, Andy, I thought of something. As you're swimming up towards the surface, you know, and you've grabbed that breath of air.
Mm.
And you're like, you'd swallow it with your lungs or whatever. And then you hit, you feel this ding, like that, a tension pulling on you from below, and you look down and it's one of your balls has got stuck between two rocks and it's holding you back, and you realize it's down there, it's like 50 to 100 meters below you, and you gotta go back down. You didn't realize how much coiled rope there was inside that bag. Coiled sort of testicular rope.
Yeah. Do you go back down though, or do you sever it?
Oh. Well, what you do is you realize that there's still a few drops of air left in the bag.
You squeeze those out.
You know, once you squeeze them out and breathe that in, you suddenly you're neutrally buoyant and you can swim up and down much easier than before, you know. And so you can swim down very quickly, and then you unhook it. You coil it around. You coil that testicular rope around your arm, and then you swim back up. And that first breath of air, it's a struggle, but it's the nicest air you've ever tasted.
You get halfway back up, and then you feel another tug, and you realize the other one's become entangled.
The other testicle, course.
That's beautiful stuff. Is it a sketch?
I think you know, it's like a grandfather telling his son about this mythical ball bag's one breath of air.
Mm. Well, he tells this story, and then the kid says, "But that's not true, Granddad. That's not a true story about the guy who got the breath of air from his ball bag and then had to swim back down to unhook his testicles from the rock." And then the granddad says, "Sure, son, you believe what you want to believe." Or your grandson. And then the grandson goes off to bed. And then we see the granddad slowly, I don't know what he's doing, but he pulls up his sleeve and you can see the coiled testicle string all the way up his arm.
You know what I saw it? I saw it that he was going to... I mean, it's amazing that he's still got the testicle string around his arm.
Well, it's so stretched out and long now. He has so much and he doesn't know what to do with it. And he doesn't have a functioning sack anymore.
Well, I mean, he could have, like, you know, you could have put a zipper on there or something like that, you know?
You're right.
See, as well, in my image of where you were going to go with it, he pulls his testicle and all that string around out of his bag, and he does a little lasso show for his grandson.
Yeah.
I thought that's where you were going, Andy.
I think that's a happy ending.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, a grandfather who'll do anything to entertain his grandson.
I'm picturing the old guy in The Princess Bride when he's reading to that kid in bed.
Yeah, and I picture you picturing that. I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, I think you would enjoy it.
Yeah, I feel like people seem to like it enough that I would also.
It's
like
a whole
it.
Lot of fun.
I think I've heard more stories about the set of that movie than I've heard than I've seen scenes of it.
I don't think I've heard any stories about the set of that movie.
I think I heard that Billy Crystal was there writing jokes on the set, which doesn't make sense to me now that you'd have a writer there writing jokes while you're filming.
I mean,
I guess somebody could add stuff and things like that, but that he would be reading them out during the, you know, like in between takes, and everybody would, no, in between takes, and everybody would be laughing and having a great time. And I just couldn't imagine myself writing jokes in the moment and feeling so confident in them that I'm telling a room full of people and everybody's laughing.
And they're putting them in the movie.
And they're putting him in the movie. Andre the Giant is there. Was he there? Was he in that movie?
Yeah, he was.
Then all the other actors are there too. They're all laughing. Billy Crystal's a hero.
I love that in movies it never seems too late to try and fix a movie. You know, that they're like, you know, they don't seem to put enough effort into the script very often early on. And then they're like, write the script at the last minute. And then they're filming it. They're changing things on the set. They're changing directors, changing writers on the set, you know, recasting roles. Then they make the thing. Then they go and do a bunch of reshoots. And then they get people in to, like, write extra lines that can be shouted in from off screen to try and make it all make sense and make it funnier. And then they do audience testing and they change more things and they change the ending, that sort of thing. But I think their problem is that they give up when the film is released. I think that even after the film is already in cinemas, or they should have, you know, people capable of impersonating the voice of the actors in the theater, shouting extra lines over the top of the dialogue, you know, or even mailing letters to people who have seen the film with additional dialogue.
I was thinking of adding this.
It's never too late. Never give up. You can still make
absolutely.
The perfect film.
You can, you know, yeah. It's just, you can rewrite the meaning of doing something last minute by literally making your last edit on the film in your last minute of life.
Correct. That's the only moment that it stops.
And also, Andy, another way that in which you could have a butt hut is... it's a place that sells those big slimy tails like Jabba the Hutt has that you can add to your butt.
You're right.
Maybe You're right. And replace your legs. Maybe replace your legs as well. It's just like a big kind of gooey thing that binds up your legs. And and allows you to lay on your side and kind of hurt your shoulder.
It's a very good thing. That's a sort of like a mermaid, right? Was Jabba the Hutt a mermaid?
I guess so. I guess he looked like he was the larval form of something.
Yeah, I suppose so. Imagine if he went into a cocoon and became a beautiful butterfly, a Hutterfly. Mm. Jabba the Hutterfly. All right.
I'm going to take us through our sketch ideas for today, Andy.
Thank you.
We've got bottled fly vomit.
Mm.
It's a new product that you can sell in health food. Andy, are you low on energy?
It's probably because you're wasting so much digesting food.
That's right. Spray a little fly vomit on there. First day fly ride. I mean, this is nice. It's a first date. What are they going to do? Well, I heard that there's this place down the road that's started breeding sort of horse-sized flies. And you can ride
flies.
Them. They put a saddle on them and everything. You can fly them.
they'd be so noisy. It'd be really loud on there, and very vibrationary, I would imagine.
I know, but I think there'd be a lot of fun too. You know, I think when motorcycles are very vibrationary, and that doesn't stop people riding those. Fly Me to the Moon. This is a ship that uses the people who are riding in it as the fuel.
Mm.
And this is because...
They found a loophole in John F. Kennedy's speech.
Speech. And they said he would get them there and bring them back alive as some sort of living creature. I can't help but feel there was a loophole there that we could do. Then we've got a speculative Elvis impersonation or impersonator, and you know they go through all the eras of Elvis that didn't happen but could have. What would have Elvis, who had lived for 200 years, how would his act would have changed? You know?
What if he hadn't died on the toilet, but instead had never died?
Yeah, well, think about it.
Become the oldest living creature.
Well, he might have been able to, you know, keep making money and been the first person to afford, you know, death-stopping medicine, youth, you know, reverse aging. He could have gone back and had like a toddler. Had a toddler era where he decided to go back as a toddler and he did performances sort of in, you know, maybe in Bulgaria or something like that. And he would do it and he would wear a diaper on stage and he would mostly still do the old classics, but he'd have a much lower voice.
Mm.
Not lower, but I meant higher, like a kid. But I meant lower in intelligence. His voice. Then we've got meditations on the super adequate or wetness. These are new sort of philosophical debate shows that we are going to be doing.
Correct.
A la Noam Chomsky and Michel Foucault. Do you think that we should do them in the same language or different languages the way that they did?
And we'll work it out on the day.
Great. Then we've got turkey that evolves into
cool
sound.
If you could do it in French. Do you reckon you could do it in French?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could only really do this this show in Quebec, I think, if you wanted to do it bilingually.
All right.
Because you would have to go somewhere where most people speak both languages. Or I guess we could do it in Belgium and stuff. You know, or, you know, any kind of French-speaking countries in Europe where they speak English as well.
But only French-speaking countries in Europe?
Well, because... Oh, maybe Germany as well. But I think they would have to speak the languages that we're both speaking, I'm saying.
Is it Liberia? Do they speak French and English in Liberia?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know enough about the population. I apologize.
It's okay.
We got turkey that evolves into sound. That's... I think it's the birthing moment that I'm interested in.
Yeah, okay.
Then we got Butt Hut, and it's the second opinion doctor's surgery.
Mm.
It's a tiki themed. And then we've got the ball bags, mythical one breath.
Mm, I feel like we did an extra breath of air recently where you keep it in your stomach, maybe. Like a burp. You always have a burp stored up so that if you can breathe that.
And you can catch it and rebreathe it in.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is something in there where that allows you to... That's why the Heimlich works.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a bit of air trapped in there in the diaphragm or whatever. And they can,
great. And that's so Geppetto can breathe when he's in the stomach of a whale.
Oh, but no, that's not in your stomach because that's you're not like having to blow food out of someone's food pipe. It's out of the lungs and stuff, right? Out of the air pipe. Oh. So I made a boo boo. Andy, Jim Brie, I hope you're happy with the ball bags. One breath. I'm sorry if that wasn't really a. I guess we kind of went there because we started talking about the scrotum having its outside being able to be
down flat.
Outside down. Andy, I think we got to go to the song now.
Oh, it's time for a song. Oh, dear, Al.
Thank you so much, everybody. Oh, Andy, did you start dying by the end of that one?
Yeah, I really, like, my brain turned off about 5 minutes ago.
Well, let's let people know quickly that they can purchase Magma now from sospresents.com.
Yes, you can. That's and the link is below. And we've been tweeting about it on our Twitter. So if you don't follow us on Twitter, we'd love for you to do that anyway. I try and keep people updated about the podcast.
Yeah. You'll find it in places. If you just search for it, I'm sure it will be doable.
And it's very affordable, and it's highly enjoyable.
Thank you very much, Andy. And I also find that. Everybody, you were great. You can find us on Twitter at 2andTank. I'm at AlistairTB.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
And we're also on Instagram at 2andTank. You can support us on Patreon, and you can also give us ratings on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, and it feels nice when you do. It feels so nice. Oh, I miss it. I miss it. When you guys do it, it feels good. Anyway, take care.
We
love
you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.